Now back to our regular orders for our show today, and that's the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing. Let me introduce our band of motley film critics here in the studio with me this morning. Yes, you're welcome. Film professor Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
KCUR, Steve Walker. Steven, how are you?
I'm fine, Steve. Thanks.
And Robert Butler, who works at the Kansas City Public Library. You can see his film reviews at butlerscinemascene.com. Robert, how are you?
Feeling singularly motley.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's begin with this intriguing new documentary about musical legend, theater legend, Elaine Stritch. If you aren't familiar with her, she's a hoot. Let's listen to a clip from this film to get a sense of exactly what this 88-year-old is all about.
The object of my affection can change my complexion from white to rosy red. He holds my hand and tells me that he's mine.
I first met her at a Sopranos premiere. Somebody was behind me and said, "I think you're wonderful." I turned around and I looked down. I said, "Thank you." And I turned back around and he goes, "Geez," I heard, "don't condescend to me, you son of a." And I turned around and I looked at this little beautiful lady and she, I don't know, she gave me some diatribe about something, and I immediately fell in love with her.
And again, joining us now is the director of the film, of Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me, Chiami Karasawa. Chiami, thanks for taking some time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a thrill to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Did your hairdresser really suggest this film?
He did, you know, and he's a man of very few words, so I paid attention when he made, you know, the pronouncement that I should be making a film about Elaine Stritch.
Where did that where did he get the idea?
Well, we have the same hairdresser, and I noticed her at the salon one day, and I said, "Is that Elaine Stritch?" You know, because I recognized her from 30 Rock, and I'd been a script supervisor in feature film and television for about 15 years before I became a documentary producer. And I had worked with her for one day, maybe 3 years earlier, on John Turturro's film Romance and Cigarettes, where she was cast as Jim Gandolfini's mother. Hmm. And she made quite an impression on myself and the cast and the entire crew during that one day of filming.
Really? I'm shocked. And yeah.
I mean, she was her typical tornado self, you know. So when I saw her in the hair salon, I was a little bit shocked to know that we had the same hairdresser.
Well, dare I ask what it was like to work with her on this project, Chiami?
Well, you know, I mean, everyone assumes that it might have been a torturous situation, but actually quite the opposite. I think once you get through, you know, Elaine's barbs or the jungle, as Nathan Lane calls it, you're really in. If she likes you and trusts you and has faith in you, it's all access. And I think that the film speaks well for that. She gave us incredibly intimate access to her and everything that was going on in her life. And I thought that took an incredible amount of courage.
We're visiting with the director of Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me, Chiami Karasawa. You know, one more thing, Chiami, before our critics weigh in here. Tell us a little more about her and exactly who she is.
Elaine is, you know, I think Julie Keyes in the film, one of her friends says it best. She's a Molotov cocktail of madness, sanity, and genius.
What a
description. I don't think there's a better one-liner than that. She's just an incredible performer. She's an entertainer to the core, but she's also a very fragile, vulnerable person. She has an incredible modern sensibility. You know, I just can't say enough things about her, but she also has these tremendously conflicting qualities. You know, she's bold and brash, and yet, you know, she's insecure, as Hal Prince mentioned. But above all, she is a survivor. She's a survivor of, you know, the industry, having been on the stage and screen for over 60 years. Hmm. She's a survivor of life. You know, she lived through her husband's death. She's lived through diabetes,
right,
a lifetime with, you know, diabetes. She's lived through alcoholism. And she's still here, you know, as the Sondheim song goes. And she's actually celebrating it. She's not feeling, you know, sorry for herself. She wants to live every day to the fullest, and I think that's a wise lesson.
Bob Butler wants to weigh in here.
Chiami, I love the movie, and I was astonished at some of the things you got. Now, if someone said to me, "I want to make a movie of your life," I would be all over the place saying, "Turn the camera off now. This is not for the movie." And yet, there are things in this that just astonished me that you were allowed to keep on filming, and she pretty much pretended like you weren't there. For instance, when she's getting ready for one of her big cabaret shows, and she can't remember the lyrics, the rehearsal's going terrible, she has to call it off. And I'm thinking she's at her most fragile. You know, here's a performer who's not sure she can perform. I certainly wouldn't want to have the cameras on me. Did you ever feel any pressure to look away?
Well, you know, I think the key behind having the access that we did is that, you know, this was filmed over a long period of time, probably more than a year and a half. And wow. Elaine and I had become quite close. You know, after the first 3 weeks where she paid a lot of attention to the camera, when she and I started having dialogues and becoming friends, and she started to know, you know, every individual cameraman that I would bring on, and it was very intimate, just myself and another person, small camera. I personally would lavalier Elaine, and we'd use a small shotgun, and just became part of her entourage, you know, her family that she wanted to have around, actually. You know, as soon as you become useful to Elaine, and we would carry her bags and hail cabs and help her make appointments and take her to the store, you know, I mean, I think she really trusted and valued that relationship. So that, you know, it got to the point where when I wasn't there, I'd get these texts from whoever was in the room and saying, Elaine wants to know where the hell you are. and I think there's something validating about, you know, being independent, being on your own, living a life alone, and then suddenly having someone witnessing and documenting, you know, your experience. I think it's tremendously validating if you live alone.
Steve Walker.
You know?
Hi, my name's Steve. I'm a huge Stritch fan. I love this movie. I've seen Stritch several times in New York, and I think it's amazing that you captured this time in her life when last year she left New York. It's to me, it's going to be like going to New York and not seeing the Chrysler Building there, because she is an institution.
Right.
But what more significantly, I think, I don't recall another film that captures the last breaths, the last ebb of a performer of her stature. This is an artist at the end.
Yeah.
And that had to have been a little bittersweet for you.
Oh, God. It still is. You know, I hate to say the end because I think it's never the end. Elaine always surprises people like the Phoenix, you know.
Oh, sure.
And she just kind of, you know, she had fallen very recently, not recently, but last fall after she broke her hip. You know, we had stopped filming and we were editing and she broke her hip and she had an engagement to do a talk at the Rubin Museum in New York City. And I was talking with her assistant at the time and I said, I think you better cancel this. You know, she's literally just had a hip replacement surgery and a week and a half later they wanted her to go on stage and do this, you know, talk. And would you not know it, she was walking 4 days after surgery.
Wow.
You know? And she walked, and she said, I'm going to do it. She walked on stage. It happened to be my birthday, December 19th. She walked across the stage without a walker or any assistance, sat down and acted like she just didn't have her entire hip replaced. You know?
Wow, wow.
So she's somebody of incredible fortitude. If she has something that she has in her mind she's going to do, she's going to do it. You know, and,
wow.
And I think the most amazing thing is that she brings audiences into that moment with her. So you're not waiting for perfection. You're waiting to see what Elaine Stritch is going to do.
Cynthia
Haynes.
And I
think that's remarkable talent.
Hi, this is Cynthia. In an interview that you did that appears on the Tribeca website, you said this film is about courage, acceptance, inevitability of aging, of time, of making decisions about accepting yourself. And that really does sum up this movie. And I think my colleagues might agree. We're finding more depth, more interest, more passion in documentaries these days than we are in feature films. And
oh,
I think,
absolutely. Yeah.
And I think you did an incredible job. You did not betray her in any way, I think. But you didn't pull any punches either. So I think you made a wonderful film. Kenneth Turan gave it a wonderful review today on NPR, and it opens nationwide.
I know, that's great.
It'll open here in Kansas City on March the 14th at the Tivoli Theater, and I really encourage people to go see it.
You know,
Chiami, so
how did Elaine Stritch react to this film? What has she said to you about it?
You know, her favorite line when she gets asked that question at festivals and in front of a live audience, she said, I love the film. I think it's terrific. I think it's well shot, well edited, well paced. I just don't want to be in it. And, you know, I think it was hard for her initially to see the film because I don't think anybody has any idea of what somebody else's interpretation of their life is going to look like.
Yeah.
And And she was nervous, not because she was ashamed or thought any moment was false, but because she didn't know how the audience would respond to her as a human being and not as a performer. You know, she's used to entertaining and laughing and singing, you know, making people really enjoy themselves. And she thought, will people enjoy this? And when we premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, you know, in front of 500 people in a packed theater, we got this incredible standing ovation, and she was shocked.
Wow.
And she
wow.
grabbed my arm and said, thank you. And she just couldn't get over it, you know. And ever since she got that kind of reception, I think it's really validated the fact that she got to be who she was. She got to say the things that she felt like were the truth about her existence, and she was well received. And that meant the world to her.
Bob.
You know, this, you say that, well, I get the feeling she's always on. You know, I'm not sure there's a time when Elaine Stritch isn't a performer, even at her lowest. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, but yeah. I think it's because she has the most interesting and entertaining things to say, not because she's, like, trying to do a, you know, tap dance in front of the camera. She just is at that age and of that era where, you know, words really meant something. You know, from Sack of Rocks, she gave me this advice. I remember one time I was going through this breakup, and she said to me, you know, I'd been dating a guy for a while. She was trying to figure it out. I was talking about a long relationship, and she said, look, Jim, either the circus is in town or it's not. And I mean, is there anything more apropos than that? I mean, she really has got the words. She's got the language, you know.
Well, Chiyomi Karawasawa is the director of Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me, and thank you for taking some time with us today. We sure appreciate it.
Oh, it was a thrill. I hope people get to see the film and appreciate Elaine as much as I do.
Good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Let's come back to our critics here in the roundtable. You all liked it. I'm getting the impression
it's
this was a
fabulous
strong
film. I haven't had more emails from people who I know who have said, when are you going to see this film? When's the sneak of this film? I want to see it.
Elaine Stritch tends to be a cult favorite.
Well, you
I
either
think
know
film,
her.
I think this film is going to change that.
If you don't know her, Google her and watch her singing within the last 5 years. Yes, she forgets lyrics, but she's a great actor on top of being an incredible performer. In this movie, we have to say, she mentioned the diabetes. There's a scene in the film where she's going into diabetic shock, and she's hallucinating, and it's quite brutal. And Elaine Stritch could have said to her, don't show that.
But she didn't.
She didn't say it. No, it's all there.
Wow. I think it's also a testament to the filmmaker that she developed
this. She trusted her, yeah.
That she trusted her as much as she did.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here with our art, independent, and foreign film critics. We'll turn to Stranger by the Lake, The Rocket, and Spinning Plates. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're visiting with Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler about the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing. Let's just twaddle along here and go to Stranger by the Lake, Steve Walker. It's a tale of murder at a cruising spot in the French countryside.
That it is. It's been called sort of Hitchcock meets the Al Pacino film Cruising. It's the only place it's set is at this cruising park where men meet for clandestine sex. And about a third of the way through, this guy's watching two guys swimming out in this lake, and one comes back. Mm. He thinks they're kind of playing, you know, but then he meets this guy, and we have watched him basically kill someone, but this guy's somewhat convinced that that couldn't have happened. And so we watch the rest of the film is watching their relationship develop. And then there's twists and turns, and a police detective comes on the scene and starts asking questions, which the other guy doesn't like. It's got a very well calibrated sense of dread.
Yeah,
once you watch the murder,
atmosphere is very good in this. However, I'd be remiss if we didn't point out that there is very graphic sex in this.
Very,
I'm
graphic.
Talking about like not simulated, the real deal here. Now, this brings up an interesting issue to me. There used to be a thing called gay cinema because gay people weren't being given the role models and all, you know, from the mainstream that they wanted. That's changed. There are gay characters in all sorts of movies now.
Mm-hmm.
What struck me about this movie is that by actually putting hardcore stuff in here, the director may have been trying to establish his bona fides of gay cinema. This is what gay cinema does now. It has to be specific enough to give the audience something they're not going to get from a mainstream depiction. And I find that a little, I actually found that very disturbing. If this has been two heterosexuals having real sex on the screen, it would have thrown me off my game too, because it's just hard to look at this and say it's only a movie. It's only a movie when clearly this isn't just a movie.
Right. The body doesn't fake some things we see. So, but it doesn't cheapen it. I mean, the story and the suspense definitely holds up on its own, but people need to be warned. This is X. If there was an X rating still, it is.
You warned me, Steve. And
I said, just be aware.
Yeah. And I tell you, I've never seen such graphic sex in a mainstream film as I have with this movie. But it adds a whole other dimension to it.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a good way. I mean, it makes it something that is not predictable. I mean, you really wonder about this guy's motives of, you know, hanging around with this fellow who may or may not be a murderer. And there's humor in it.
And he avoids questions by this older man he sort of befriends. What do you do all day? You're here every day. Do you have a job? So we don't know a lot about this central character other than that he's there every day to meet men.
And one of the more interesting characters, I think, is a guy who claims he isn't gay, who sits there every day looking for companionship. He really just wants someone to talk with. He's just a lonely guy.
Yeah. I'm just wondering about this. You know, this notion, I haven't seen the film, but this connection between gay relationships oftentimes and violence. Does that bother anybody?
The two ideas
seem to go together so often when it comes to the cinema. Or is it just me looking at that?
I haven't noticed it. I'm pretty sensitive to it. I haven't noticed anything that's offended me in a long, long time. I mean, we've got portrayals like Jared Leto's Ray On, who just won an Oscar for playing a transgendered character who was probably handled with more dignity than I've ever seen on screen. I think it's just such a different time. But this movie is shockingly new.
I have to give props to the director, Alain Gourady, if that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
He really knows how to handle his camera, and he's done something here that I haven't seen since 1966 in Blow Up. The forest paths along which these men meet for tryst, the wind is always whipping through the trees. You remember in Blow Up the park on the top of the hill and the body in the bushes? I mean, it has that same kind of formidable, hovering dread.
You know, only you, Bob, would refer to some 1966 film that I've never heard of and say, we've never seen this since then. You know, okay, good for you.
I'm surrounded by Philistines.
And no music. I mean, I think you made reference to the fact, Bob, that the wind and the insects and all that was the background music that you were hearing.
Right.
And it added a level of suspense to this very suspenseful movie.
And so does the red car in the parking lot. Just if you go to see this, watch the red car. It's there every day. And another day, and another day, punctuating the fact that other guy did not come out of that lake.
Yeah.
It's really well done. But be warned.
Stranger by the Lake, three thumbs up, but be forewarned, as Steve
and
Walker
it's
just said.
Showing at the Tivoli Theater.
Showing at the Tivoli, okay.
Opens today.
Cynthia, let's turn to The Rocket. A young boy who's believed to bring bad luck to everybody around him leads his family and two new friends through Laos to find a new home.
I really, really like this film. If you liked Whale Rider, an Australian film, or Beasts of the Southern Wild, this film is about a young boy's life in danger that is very compelling. It's disturbing at times because of the pending the impact of war has on families and on children in particular. But it's a story about a 10-year-old boy played by a young man named Sid Thipson Desamo, and his character's Alo, who is absolutely amazing. He carries the weight of the film on his shoulders. He was born a twin, and his grandmother was mortified because that indicates bad luck. His mother begs to let him live, and there's superstition throughout the film. They're forced to evacuate their village and relocate because a dam's being built. So you follow this journey with this young kid, and I think he's fantastic.
Steve Walker?
What I like about it is that there's a fable quality to it. From the moment this little boy is born as a twin and his grandmother makes this proclamation, one is blessed and one is cursed. And so that sort of sets the tone for this boy's life. And then the family has to relocate because of a construction project, and we watch the family relocating. We watch their livestock starving. And then, towards the end, there's this competition to build, like, a rocket propelled by fireworks, that kind of rocket. So it ends in a kind of predictable way, but up to that point, it's very compelling, like Cynthia said.
I'm going to have to take exception.
This one
didn't quite work for me, and you hit on something there. They're trying to make it a fable.
And
yet I never found, at least for me, that the director was able to find just that right light touch that allows you to take something that looks extremely realistic and make it a fable. Although there was one character, I got to admit, when he goes to a relocation camp, there's a little girl he meets, and her uncle, who is her caregiver, wears a bright purple suit, has his hair in a pompadour, and he's a James Brown fanatic. To see that in Laos is kind of interesting.
But this correlation between rockets, and he enters a competition where they shoot off rockets, and these bombs that are laying around in villages, the aftermath of a war that was fought on that land is just, I saw a connection.
So two of the three of you give it a thumbs up. Then.
I do,
Rocket, okay.
I do.
And that's now showing at the Tivoli too, right, Cynthia?
Yes.
Okay. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing our guests Steve Walker, Cynthia Haynes, and Bob Butler. And let's move on here to a film we talked about last month, Spinning Plates, Steve Walker. It's a doc about the owners of three different restaurants and the trials and tribulations of, you know, being in a very difficult restaurant business.
Well, last month on the show, we interviewed Grant Achatz, who's one of the premier chefs in America. His restaurant, Alinea, in Chicago, was rated number one in North America recently. So you can archive our show from a month ago to that. And now the movie's finally open. We thought it was opening sooner. But it does follow three restaurants over the course of the film. Alinea, very expensive place, Michelin stars. Bright Box, a family kind of country diner.
Up in Iowa.
So beloved by the locals that many people have their own keys to the front door and go in and start coffee, which I thought was just funny. And then a taqueria up in Arizona, run by a modest family of Hispanic descent. And so you think, how can these three restaurants have anything in similar other than feeding people? But what we see through the film is the love, the passion, the idea that food is life, whether you're making breakfast tacos or you're making foam out of celery air. I mean, like, that's how Grant Achatz cooks. It's a great film. It's really well done.
Cynthia?
I enjoyed it, too, and it was a very clever premise. Instead of just focusing on one restaurant, but seeing how these three very, very different places have a lot in common.
Okay. Let's move on here to a film, Omar, a drama about a Palestinian activist who, after his arrest, is forced to become an informant for Israel. Cynthia Haynes.
This is a combination Romeo and Juliet and political thriller, I would say. It was the nominated for Best Foreign Language Film this past year. And
did it deserve that nomination?
I think it did.
I think so.
I think it did. Adam Bakiri stars as Omar, who is a baker. He regularly climbs the Israeli security wall to visit his girlfriend. And then he's regularly harassed by Israeli soldiers. And one day, Omar and his friends wind up killing an Israeli officer. And then the film becomes this tale of paranoia and betrayal because the Israelis are trying to get Omar to turn on his friends and be an informer. I thought it was very powerful film. I thought it was much better the second half, where it really brought you into this political drama.
You know, NPR had a story about this film, and the director was saying that he's been thinking about this film for a long time.
Yeah, ever since he made his other film, Paradise Now, about the last days of some suicide bombers, which I think was also nominated for an Oscar.
That. Yeah.
Another good film. And because he became paranoid while he was filming this. So anyway, be on the lookout for another film called Bethlehem, which is almost identical, but it's from the Israeli perspective. This film is from the Palestinian perspective.
And that paranoia is heightened because the Palestinian guy, when the Israeli officials do bring him in for questioning, they make deals, and he's going to go undercover. And does he rat on his friends at the expense of losing the woman he loves, plus his moral quandaries about Israelis? There's a lot going on in this film, and it's really crisp and tightly edited, and there's some chases through this little village and these stores and markets that are just amazingly done.
Yeah, very well shot. It's in Arabic.
Okay. That's Omar. And again, very strong feelings on a positive vein for that film as well. So if you had to go out and see a film this weekend, what are your three to see? Do you guys have lists or where are you? What would you recommend, Bob, as you look at what's available out there?
Yeah. I got. You know what? I'm sorry that the Oscar shorts are no longer still playing because
they are in. I think in Lawrence
are
at
they?
Liberty Hall. Yeah.
Well, okay. I'll be honest with you. I would devote my weekend to seeing them. Seriously, they are that good this year.
These are the which ones?
The Oscar-nominated shorts. There are three programs: documentary, short live action, and short animation.
Well, let me just hop on my high horse, because last weekend I went out and saw the short docs, and I'll tell you, for my money, I thought those were the five most compelling films
they were great,
I've seen in years.
Docs,
all
docs.
Five took me to places I haven't been to before, and I was just at one point in the story about the guy who builds caves, when they first show the magnificence of what he does, I started saying out loud, oh my gosh, my wife had to elbow me in the gut to shut me up. I could not believe what I was seeing. I did such a great job of sort of setting up what he does and then finally showing you in its full grandeur exactly what this guy does. It took my breath away. I could not believe what I was
seeing. And you know, it's interesting. Films about artists that are fictional seldom work, but almost every documentary I've seen about an artist is tremendous.
Remember the one about Andy Goldsworthy, the guy who takes leaves and mud and makes
I don't remember that.
Rivers and Tides, was that what it was called?
Well, then one of the docs was the little documentary about the man on death row in the federal prison camp, and the people looking after him were some African-American prisoners. This guy turned out to be a lifelong racist, and the way these black men cared for him during the course of his hospice stay, it just brought you to your knees.
Yeah, yeah. It
just
did.
So beautiful to watch, and you watch this man die, and the insight and the access the filmmaker managed to get for that film, I thought was just absolutely magnificent. You know, just amazing.
Well, I noticed in the paper today, 20 Feet from Stardom, that did win the Oscar last Sunday night for Best Documentary, is back on one screen here locally, but it's also available several other places.
Film.
So are the live action shorts as good as the short docs?
No. I think they're pretty close. I do. I think they're pretty close.
And is that still showing at the Tivoli this weekend?
No, they're all at Lawrence now, apparently.
Lawrence at Liberty Hall. Want to mention Kevin Wilmot, Professor Kevin Wilmot from KU. His Jayhawkers film is showing at Standees in Prairie Village, Liberty Hall in Lawrence, and Screenland Armor. It's his new film about Wilt Chamberlain, not just about Chamberlain, but about race relations in Lawrence, Kansas around that time, and about the civil rights movement. I think every young person ought to see this movie.
Did you like it?
I did.
Yeah.
Speaking of the civil rights movement, I've got one for you, too.
Speak of it.
We are starting a series, documentary film series at the library called Created Equal. And the first one's going to be shown on March 15th. It's called Slavery by Another Name. Mm-hmm. It basically it's about how the South came up with laws to allow slavery to continue for 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. It's devastating stuff. Anyway, we're going to be showing three of those in 3 months, and they're really, really great stuff.
Wow.
The class on cultural competency I teach at KU this week, it's an online week, and they're all watching documentaries. I gave them a list of 8 and then a series of questions, and that's their assignment. And
you're
I'm getting
a demanding professor, Dr. Walker.
It's online. I have to do something.
That's a lot of stuff.
I'm not going to put Skype with them, you know. But already the essays I've had back from my students are just, you know, this documentary, amazing, moved me to tears, incredible.
That's great.
So that's a fun assignment.
You're winning over a whole new generation the American documentary.
Speaking of which, it's John Ford weekend at the Kansas City Public Library. Saturday afternoon at 1:30 downtown, we're showing Drums Along the Mohawk with Henry Fonda and Claudette Colbert. And then, and this is the one I'm proud of, 1:30 p.m. Sunday at the Plaza Branch, my Movies That Matter series, The Grapes of Wrath. One of the great, great American movies. John Ford's entire career was devoted to one question. What does it mean to be an American? And this movie nails it.
Ah, that's great.
I didn't see that movie till about 5 years ago.
And?
I have a copy. It's an amazing movie.
Congratulations are in order. The Fine Arts Theater Group's Brian and Ben Mossman and Wade Williams have received a 2014 Preservation Commendation Award from the Historic Kansas City Foundation. They've been restoring Kansas City's historic movies theaters since 1982. We owe them a debt of gratitude for all the wonderful foreign art and independent films that they've brought to us here in this area.
Wow. Okay. How about some films that are coming up down the road here? One is Tim's Vermeer. Inventor Tim Jennison seeks to understand and replicate the painting techniques used by a great Dutch master Vermeer.
Allegedly used by the great Dutch master Vermeer, because people think
there is.
They said no one could have possibly painted these paintings without the use of the camera obscura technique, where it's too hard to explain what you're telling me to wrap up, Kraske. I'm sorry.
The Grand Budapest Hotel is coming. Face of Love. Lots of other things are coming, too. I want to thank Bob Butler, Cynthia Haynes, and Steve Walker for coming in today. Always good to have you guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.